a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
Hi, folks. This is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world, the changing times, and the things we can all do to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. Today is September the 1st, 2015. This is episode 1636 of the Survival Podcast. And today it's just me. I'm going to do an individual topic for you today. And what we're actually going to talk about today is daily operations and future plans for the Nine Mile Farm and how Nine Mile Farm even came to exist. For those who might be new to the show, Nine Mile Farm is where I live. Nine Mile Farm is chiefly today a duck farm that produces duck eggs as a product, and it's an accidental farm. When we moved here in 2013, it seems like it's been longer than that in many ways, but we moved here in January of 2013. We had no illusions that this was going to be a farm. It was just going to be a permaculture homestead, and a lot of things happened along the way that we'll talk about today that led us to where we are, and all of a sudden we're sitting here with another business. An accidental business. Given that I teach you guys that businesses are one of the chief ways you can develop independence, freedom, and liberty in your own lives, I thought maybe it'd be a good way to tell you how we accidentally created another one. TSP was created as business. The Survival Podcast was designed to be a business. Within a week of playing around with it, I went, I can make this work. And I did everything with the intention of building this as a business. We really fell into the little farm. Now, the little farm is not going to make you rich. The little farm wouldn't even provide us a full-time income. But I'll tell you what our little farm could do. Our little farm, with just a few more tweaks, could really pay for the cost of living here. Period. Think about that. Being able to take your housing costs and completely earn them back from homestead-based activities. Now, I know some of you tell me when I get into like the permaculture topics and things like that, that like that's not your thing. Like you live in an apartment or you don't want to be a farmer or whatever. I think you should listen today with a hugely open mind. A hugely open mind, because business principles are the same whether you're selling pets and pet food in a retail store, whether you're selling a clothing line online, or farm to table or farm to chef production from a farm. It's really all the same. There's constants and rules to business, and there's ways that you figure out how to make something profitable. And that's really what today is going to be all about. But those of you that do like the ag and the permaculture and the homesteading, you're going to get plenty of that too. Before we do that, let's go ahead and take care of our sponsors. They do a lot to help take care of you by helping to make sure the show is here for you Monday through Friday, 5 days a week. Sponsor of the day number one today is Ready Made Resources, the company that does what it says and says what it does right on their website. All the resources you need ready made, ready to go at readymaderesources.com. And when I say all the resources, I mean it, from the tactical to the practical, from guns to gardens, and everything in between. You'll find it at Ready Made Resources. 12-volt appliances to go with your solar and wind projects? Check, they've got that. You want to do solar and wind? Hey, they've got everything you need for that. You want long-term storage food? You want it by the can or by the case? They've got it. You want to make your own long-term storage food? You need Mylar bags and O2 absorbers? They've got that. You want gamma lids for your 5-gallon buckets? Got it, check, no problem. You want to start canning, whether it's water bath or pressure canning, they've got what you need. Dehydrators, got that too. Want to get over and look at some tactical accessories or firearms if you're in their state or have an FFL to ship to? They've got it all, man. Like I said, the practical to the tactical, the guns to gardens, and everything in between. You'll find it all at the company that does what they say and says what they do. ReadyMadeResources.com, a long-term sponsor of the Survival Podcast. Happy to serve you with great pricing and great service. Again, readymaderesources.com. Next up today, sponsor of the day number two, Sawtooth Tactical. You'll find them over at sawtac.com. You'll get all the stuff you need to live that tactical lifestyle if you get on over to Sawtac. Veteran-owned, veteran-operated, and nestled in the wilderness of the Sawtooth Mountains, That's why they call them Sawtac. And when I say everything, I mean everything from the awesome Manly titanium spork, Maxpedition bags, Magpul magazines, SOE tactical gear, and everything else you can think of. If it's tactical, they have it at Sawtooth Tactical. Remember the website again, www.sawtac.com. And they also do a discount for members of the support brigade. So if you're a member and you're going to get some tactical material from Sawtac, get into your MSB account, click on benefits, and look up Sawtac and get that discount. Again, a veteran-owned, veteran-operated company nestled in the Sawtooth Wilderness of Idaho, sawtac.com. Next, I want to remind you the November TSP workshop is open for registrations. I think we booked over half the seats already yesterday. It's still open only to MSB members. Wednesday, I'll be opening it up to any and all. This will be the week of November 11th. I hope many of you come. We expect it will sell out like they always tend to do, but this one may be a little slower since we did the October one so close to it. And we booked that one full in like 18 hours. I do want to let you guys know that are coming to the October one, what you're going to be eating. We finally worked out the full menu last night. First day we do a continental breakfast. That's just like breakfast bars and stuff like that so that the staff can kind of get in gear for all the work they have to do to cook for you guys. But for lunch, we're going to do Dorothy's very special awesome meatballs. Those of you who have had them know how awesome they are. Kielbasa sausage, butternut squash soup, rolls, and we're still working out what kind of sides you're going to have to go along with that, but that's pretty much going to be lunch for Thursday. Thursday dinner is going to be rotisserie chicken, corn, green beans, rolls, potatoes, macaroni salad, potato salad, that type of thing. So the first day we kind of ease into it. Really take really great care of you at lunchtime. You know, a basic, simple dinner, but no one ever complains about it. We start kind of ramping it up from there. This is going to be the most awesome menu you guys have ever seen us put out. Friday breakfast is going to be duck eggs with handmade sausage. This is handmade sausage that I make. I have 16 pounds already made and cooked and frozen for you guys. With tortillas and cheese and peppers and cilantro and hot sauce. So basically you can make breakfast tacos out of them, or you can make, you know, bread, toast, butter, whatever. But the big star of the show are our pastured duck eggs and our handmade sausage. Lunch is going to be sandwiches, or lettuce wraps with just a ton of really great meats. We really go high end, with our meats when we do our sandwich day. It's not, you know, Oscar Mayer ham. We go, you know, boar's head, and we go all out with pastrami and you name it, we've got it there, smoked turkey, etc. Friday dinner, my barbecue brisket. We're going to do Sandy Beeden's cowboy beans, which are a meal in themselves. Corn, potato salad, rolls, just a typical good old-fashioned Texas barbecue brisket. Saturday breakfast, what we're going to have are eggs. These will be chicken eggs. We can't really spare enough to do our own duck eggs 2 days in a row, believe it or not. So they'll be, you know, organic free-range chicken eggs. We're going to have ham and bacon that day for breakfast, you know, with toast and cheese and cilantro and hot sauce. So basically, you know, either toast and bacon and eggs and sauce, bacon, eggs, and ham, or tortillas with bacon, eggs, and ham, or just bacon, eggs, and ham. Up to you. Saturday lunch, we're doing our amazing chicken tacos. We're also going to be doing a taco soup to go along with that. It is absolutely fantastic. Mexican rice, cilantro, hot sauce, all the sides to go with that. Saturday dinner, here's what we're really going to like. We're going to blow it out at the last night. We're going to be doing smoked turkey breast, that's from our turkeys that we raised this year. So these are 9 Mile Farm raised turkeys. They've been slow smoked and they're beautiful. I've cryovac'd them and put them in the freezer, and we're going to have duck and cognac sausage to go along with the turkey, roasted potatoes, carrots, corn. It's just going to be awesome. And we'll have stuff out for snacks all day. I just want to kind of tell you guys the care that goes in just to the meals. For those of you who have never been here and you're thinking about coming in November, it won't be the same menu. There will be brisket, I guarantee that, but there'll also be freshly roasted quail, maybe smoked quail. To get ready for this, I've actually ordered a case of processed quail to try out a variety of different cooking methods on and figure out what the best method is to cook quail for 50 people. I have some ideas I want to test it before. I don't want to use you guys as guinea pigs. So, you know, consider getting on out here because you're going to learn about all the stuff we're going to talk about today when you come here. And you're going to make great connections and friends. Again, the November event is now open. It's a $100 deposit to hold your space, and then the balance is due when you show up. All right, with that, let's take a look at the year that was the episode, the year 1636. I have the founding of the National Guard. I have the founding of Providence, Rhode Island, and I have the founding of everything else. What's the founding of everything else? We'll just read that today. The first synagogue of the New World is founded in Brazil, Congregation of the Rock of Israel. It's now a museum. Harvard University gets its start as New College. The name will change after a donation of a library by John Harvard. The Manchu Dynasty in China is established after a successful revolution of farmers against the Ming Dynasty. Dedham, Massachusetts is founded. In 1643, they will establish the first tax-supported public school. That's how far back that goes. Oxford University Press is licensed to print the King James Bible after the Adulterer's Bible scandal, which we talked about. Henry Adams arrives in Massachusetts. President John Adams was a sixth-generation descendant of Henry Adams. So the reason I read these is because I wanted to give you my take a little bit on John Adams. John Adams was a flawed man in many ways. And in many ways, he is what I would actually refer to as a big government statist. But a big government statist in the 1760s and 70s was basically a libertarian today. Really. And John Adams was very instrumental to the founding of this country. There's the big trio that everybody says, you know, Washington, Jefferson, Adams. But I think John Adams gets pushed a little bit aside by the average person in history, and his contributions aren't really known. And in many ways, he kind of made a buffoon out of himself after the Declaration in some capacities. And as a president, he did things like the Alien and Seditions Act, which, again, big government status. But John Adams is a guy that without him, there probably wouldn't have been a direct Declaration of Independence, at least not at the time that it happened. One of the chief architects in not just getting it done, but getting everybody on board with a lot of guidance from a cat we call Benjamin Franklin. There are some historical inaccuracies in the HBO miniseries John Adams. There really are. There's a license with everything taken. And after the first two episodes, I would say the storyline diminishes a bit in interest. But the first two episodes of that miniseries are fantastic. And when I watch it, all I can think about is what traitors are members of Congress and the Senate and our president and our chief justices of the court are today. And what has been squandered as far as liberty due to a desire for personal gain and the sacrifices made. I honestly feel that what should happen is every elected member and appointed member with any authority of our government every year on January 1st should be sat down, head strapped back, eyes pulled open with clips so they can't go to sleep, and forced to watch those first two episodes of that miniseries. So at least if they're going to be traitors, they understand what they're traitors to. My take by Jack Spierko. And with that, let's get into the main topic of today's show. So I just want to kind of review for people that have followed along and get everybody up to speed who's new to the show or hadn't really paid attention to what we've been doing here near Azle, Texas, on what we now call Nine Mile Farm. And what happened was in January of 2013, after about an eight-month search, we came back to Texas from Arkansas. We had a beautiful little place up in the mountains there, and there were things about it I really loved. I had a little bit more land there, but it was nowhere near as usable as this land. It was just forested mountain land. And I had my little, probably about three-quarters of an acre that was manageable and workable, and I'd worked on about half of that and got it somewhere along the lines of where I wanted it to go. And, you know, our intent was to stay there because it was so inexpensive to live there, and it's funny how life seems to know what it's doing even when you don't, and it really wasn't the best place for us to grow. To grow with the Survival Podcast, to grow with our own enterprises and additional businesses and things like that. And I certainly couldn't be doing workshops like I do now. I couldn't have 50 people up there. Was no place to put everybody's vehicles. It just wasn't the right kind of place for it. It wasn't a good place for that many people to camp. It just didn't work. But we didn't know any of that. What we knew is my wife was very unhappy being so far away from her family. And my father-in-law's health was already beginning to fail. We were starting to see the issues with Alzheimer's, and she wanted to keep him in his home as long as possible. So we decided we would come back to Texas. And my caveat was I got to have a rural area. I got to have I got to have a few acres of land at least, and I got to be able to do more with my land than I can now to make it So that's what I want. And her thing was, we better be an hour or less from my family. And I said, I bet we can find that. And one more thing we had was, we had to have good internet access. After about 8 months of deep searching, we found this location. We bought this property. When we moved onto it, we had no intention of being a farm for profit. That was not our intention at all. We were going to pretty much just do what we were doing in Arkansas, but a little bit bigger. You know, being up out of the mountains where we had, you know, grazing land and all, we were going to bring in some chickens and have a little chicken flock, maybe get a few ducks, and put in a bunch of swales, plant a whole bunch of trees, put in some gardens, and just go on with life. So we hit it hard. We put in swales, we put in hugel beds, we put in gardens, and the Texas heat, the alkaline soil, and the limestone here, and the shallow soils quickly put us in touch with some reality. Of everything I planted, I'd say half of it died in the first year. We added irrigation, and it went down to like 25% losses, and learned some other things that took us down to. But at this point, for every four trees I plant, I can pretty much bet one's going to be dead in a year. Now, I think I can actually continue to drive that number down as we go forward because, well, I came here and made a lot of mistakes on purpose, and I made them fast because I could afford to make them, and somebody had to do it. I wanted to find out what does work here. And the only way to find out what did work here was to find out all the things that didn't. And you know, what I found works here are things like plums, apricots, peaches, Hanson's Bush cherries, blackberries, to a degree, and a few other things. Jujube is an exotic plant. Goji seems to be doing good one minute and not the next. The goji's weird. I got these two beautiful goji bushes that came out this year, produced a whole bunch of berries for me, and then I thought they died. I mean, midsummer, they just dropped every leaf off of them. I'm sure the ducks ate some, but they just looked like they were dead. And then all of a sudden, about 3 weeks ago, I look at them and I went, there's buds. They're coming back. It's almost like they dropped their leaves midsummer to produce. And like another week, I went, they're going to produce berries again. And right now, they're in flower. They're just leaving out and they're in flower. So I've learned a lot of things that do work on the vegetative side. But what we learned works here with some work is poultry. It works. We're the right size for it. We have enough diversity of browse. During the dry part of the year, there's grasshoppers and bugs, and there's still, because of irrigation, places they can graze. And then the rest of the year, everything with all the work we have done greens up, and they have all kinds of forage. The land really is too small and too harsh to support ruminants like cattle, but birds work. Well, the chickens quickly went from being our best friend to our enemies, as every time they escaped, they tore apart everything. And somewhere along the line, we went to Tractor Supply, picked up a dozen ducks. Eight of them died. Four of them made it, and we thought ducks were fragile. So one day I asked Dorothy, do you think we should get some more ducks? She said, yeah, order them from that place online, with no idea what that place online actually meant. And I said, how many do you want? And being a plucky woman and daring me, she said 22. So I ordered 22 ducks. That all in all made us 26 ducks strong. And in the fall, those ducks started laying eggs. Well, we had started selling chicken eggs, and so I had grown the chicken flock up to about 70 birds, and we were getting a ton of chicken eggs. And we were having trouble selling the chicken eggs for $3.50, $4 a dozen, because everybody around us sells chicken eggs. As the duck eggs started to come out, I had my first duck egg in like 10 years and fell in love with them all over again and started eating them for breakfast every day and started, you know, advertising, and we had some duck eggs available, and quickly I had no duck eggs to eat. So we expanded the flock now to 130 plus birds. We have 60 birds on the way, and those birds are coming next week on Wednesday. They should be at our post office. I'll be there very early to pick them up and get them into the brooder. And all 60 of those are females. There'll be a maler. There'll be a drake or two in there. That's one thing you need to learn. When you order ducks from any kind of a supplier, Metzger's my favorite, and that's who I ordered from again, you will end up with some that are males, just because sex ID is not 100%. I think out of all our white layers, we got one that's definitely a drake and one that might be. We're not sure yet. But also now we're getting four and a half dozen eggs a day, and we are selling them literally like hotcakes at $7.50 a dozen. And I think we could raise the price if we had to a dollar, and I don't think it would affect our business at all. We literally cannot keep them in stock. We have been squirreling away a dozen here, a dozen there in the refrigerator for the October event, just so when you guys come here, we can feed you our eggs. And we can only do it one of the two breakfast days because we have customers to serve. In fact, our eggs are now on the dinner table, not the breakfast table, the dinner table at a restaurant called I Declare, which is one of the hottest new restaurants in Dallas. They came out with a list this year, the 10 hottest new restaurants in Dallas. And Dallas is a big restaurant community. There's a lot of foodies there. I mean, it's a pretty prestigious place to have a successful restaurant. And I Declare was named number 3, 2015 hottest new restaurant. And our beautiful duck eggs sit atop one of their signature dishes, which is a sweet potato chip duck confit. With the egg on top of it, and they take 12 dozen eggs a week from us, and that's all we can do for them right now. They want 20, and the company that does the pickup for them, that buys their eggs for them, would take 80 dozen a week if we had the eggs, which we can't even begin to do, which basically means if we ever produce enough eggs that we can't sell direct to consumer and to other small restaurants, we already have one customer that's basically said, we will take all your surplus. And our cost of production is around $3.50 to $4 a dozen, so we're almost at almost 100% markup. It's not get rich money, but it's good cash flow, and we have a lot of birds that aren't even into full production yet. So we kind of accidentally fell into this, and I tell the story because what I want you guys to understand is building a business isn't as hard as you've been led to believe. In some ways, it's harder because it takes dedication. It takes intention. But sometimes, if you do things the right way, it almost doesn't take intention. There was no initial intention. Let's make this, you know, we actually called it Black Dog Ranch because our dog Blackie died, and it was just as a joke, you know, but it was kind of like devoting it to Blackie. You know, with Black Dog Ranch, we laid him to rest here. You know, he was with our family 16 years, that type of thing. And, you know, it wasn't ever supposed to be an enterprise. And now we have this core enterprise where we can reach out and bring people in. And people drive from 30 minutes to an hour and a half. And we have people that come every month and drive an hour and a half every month just to buy a few dozen duck eggs. There's a customer loyalty here. Because not only you have eggs and no one else does. That's kind of where we get people initially. But what happens is they come here, they bring their kids, we walk them around the property, they see the ducks, they meet the special ducks that have names, they meet Buddy and Joe the geese, they meet us, they meet our dogs, they see that we're real, that we're genuine, they see how they're treated, and they realize something. Duck egg, chicken egg, doesn't matter. I can't buy anything like this anywhere else. There is no second option for this. Every single thing on a store shelf is second rate compared to what they have here. And that is powerful. And what, again, you can build a business doing almost anything. And I'm telling you, that is the key. To put out a product that's a little bit better than people can get anywhere else and then price it right at the top of the market. Not at the very, not beyond the top, not at the very top, right at the top edge. And we're actually under. At $7.50 a dozen, we're under Whole Foods for duck eggs. Whole Foods is selling duck eggs right here in Dallas for $1 an egg. $12 a dozen. And people buy them. And you can't always get them. And they're coming from ducks all over the place, mishmashed. No idea where they came from. No idea what they were fed. It's factory farming. $12 a dozen because they're duck eggs. We're selling a premium product for more than you'll pay for any chicken egg anywhere, but we have loyal customers and they keep coming back. And you can do that with just about anything. You could do that with web design. There's a lot of web designers. There's not a lot of good ones. You can do that with graphics design. There's a lot of graphics designers. Not a lot of good ones. That's about as 180 out from farming as you can get, web and graphics design or database compilation or whatever. You can do this with anything, but you have to make it yours. And once you have a core, you can start building off of it. So I want to talk to you about the units we're considering adding. Some of them are just happening. Some of them we're thinking about it because we only have so much time basically a lot of this stuff falls to Dorothy and whether or not she wants to do it. And, you know, I'd put my son in business here if I thought he wanted it, but I don't think he does. I don't think he's ready to be in business for himself yet, so I'm not ready to try to force him into it. But the one thing that we're going to be adding, and it's going to be one of the few things that I'm going to sell online, and I'm probably only going to do it like every year around Christmas time, we're adding a line of herbal teas. This was a plan we've had for a long time. We put in a really nice area that's going to grow a ton of mint for us, and I'm going to start propagating the heck out of mint. And anywhere I have bare ground where I have irrigation, I'm going to start plugging mint. There'll be mint everywhere because the ducks don't eat it. And it's a good ground cover, and it's, as anybody that's ever grown it knows, it's very aggressive. And whatever I can put on top of dirt and hold dirt down with, I'll do. And it ain't going to outcompete trees and bushes, which are the other things I'm growing. So I'll grow as much of that as I can. But, you know, that was the plan. We'll come up with this big diversity of mint, you know, 15 varieties. We'll put this big mint garden in, and we'll make these little bags of mint tea. Well, I started thinking, when are you going to be able to sell some mint tea? And I was thinking, well, next year, about this time. You know, you'll have enough where you can go through the scythe and cut it and hang it up. And how much are you going to get? Once it's all dried, 5 pounds. Okay, dummy, why don't you go see how much high-end, top-quality, bulk peppermint is? And I did. And I went, really? So then what I've done now, I've gone out and I've ordered from several different of the best suppliers I can find about 35 different herbs, and I ordered, you know, 4 ounces, 5 ounces, stuff like that. And I'm going through right now and I'm developing blends. And what we've decided we're going to do to differentiate ourselves, we're going to base the names of our different blends on the time of day and what they're for. Like morning wake up or morning meditation. You know, or midday pick me up, things like that. One that we're going to do that's going to be full of tonifying herbs. It is going to be called Victorious. And, you know, we'll talk about what the herbs are known for versus claiming what they do to stay clean with that. And I was wondering, like, can I do this in Texas without, you know, getting into some kind of complication? So the first complication whenever you start selling physical product is sales tax. Loose teas are considered a food product, and they are not considered a processed food product or a prepared food product, so they are not subject to sales tax. So, okay, passes that one. And under the Cottage Food Act of the state of Texas, I can do $50,000 a year in those as a business unit before I have to do anything special. I think we're going to do that. So we're going through and we're developing these blends. We're going to make stories behind them. We're going to add them to the website. And we're going to start selling them to our customers. And what I'm probably going to come up with in the end is 8 blends. Dorothy and I came up with the names for them last night. And the stories behind them, we're developing the blends for them. And what I'll probably do online is instead of selling individuals, you have to buy all 8. It's once a year. It's like a gift product. We'll do 200. Well, do a little math there and figure out. You know, we can probably make $8,000-$10,000 off that one business unit in online sales. Now, can anybody do that? Yes. Can anybody do it with the ease we can as far as introducing that product? I have a market. I mean, Matthew from Mai Tai Coffee contacted me the other day. Hey, we got 50 pounds of this honey processed coffee in. I do a blog post. 2 hours later, there's none left. Yet not everybody has a podcast where they can market their product through. But let me point out, 9 Mile Farm has built its business 95% on people who have no idea what the Survival Podcast is. 9 Mile Farm is not Jack Spirico's business. It is Dorothy Spirico's business. She has built it. She has run it. She services the customers. She has a way with calling customers. I don't even want to tell her how good she's doing because I might break it for her. Whenever she returns a call to a customer, she doesn't say, this is Dorothy with 9 Mile Farm. She says, hi, this is Dorothy with the duck eggs. And people are just in love. You can't teach that. That's 20 years of being a pediatric nurse, calling parents and telling them about their kids' illnesses. And doing phone triage that just makes her that personable. Dorothy built that business. The herbal tea business, we can do this little component of online sales. And I think as a, you know, a Christmas time thing or something, it'd be a good way to do it. Limited offer. But selling it to our existing customers is going to be easy. We've talked to them about it. They're all over it. And I'm learning things already. Like, so I've looked at a lot of different chamomile teas. And chamomile is a great relaxing herb. And what I've always seen with chamomile teas is it looks like powdered dust. So I found a supplier that does organic chamomile that's basically the whole flower. They look like little yellow berries. And the smell's unbelievable. And I brewed up some by itself, and then I brewed up some last night with a mix of green tea and lemon balm just to see how that blend works. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. It's like buttery velvet in a cup. right? Now, I know, does that sound survival-y? Well, yeah. When you can take, you know, $20 worth of dried herbs and make $100 worth of product out of it and sell it, yeah, it's survival-y. Because I don't know if you've checked on how you pay for all the stuff you have right now, but usually it's with this stuff called money. And so initially I was resistant to this because I had this and I'm just around belaboring this one a little bit because I know people out there have the same problem. I was like, I want to produce the product on this property. And then I sat down and I looked at this property and I said, Jack, when you bought this property, you bought it for a reason. It does exactly the things you bought it for. It gives you space. It lets you run workshops. It lets you have animals. It's hard, but it works. It's manageable. You'll be able to establish the trees and stuff you want over time. But if you were going to put in an herb farm, specifically to do herbs for teas and other things, would you buy this piece of land to do that with? And I went, absolutely not. Well, then don't try to make it that. Let this property be what it is. Let its story sell your products and source what you can't produce so that other people can have successful businesses too. Because every time we buy 2 pounds of that organic chamomile, somebody somewhere has been able to have, and it's multiple people, because that particular chamomile comes from Germany. So, well, that's a German business. Well, the company I buy it from is an American business. The company I buy it from is an American business. They're buying it, and they're packaging it, and they're reselling it just like I am. I'm putting it together with a blend that does things that other things don't. We're going to have one that's called Deep Dreams that specifically blends certain tea herbs. And this will be the one that will have to have a disclaimer, like, don't use this if you're pregnant type of thing, because there will be things in there like valerian and California poppy. But these are herbs that have been shown over the years to help enhance dreaming. And then we'll have just a deep sleep, so a Deep Dreams and a Deep Sleep. So one that's more along just winding down at the end of the day. We're going to have one that's designed to help you, you know, digest your food based on ginger, galangal, and some other things. We're going to have one with some dried goji in it. And eventually my dried goji berries might be in my tea, but until then, you can source those too. So I realized in this almost by accident that you could build an entire herbal tea business from your kitchen table by doing unique blends and being smart about how you market them into whatever market you have, or by building a market for them. And I found out there's a lot of people doing it, more than I ever realized. But I also realized it doesn't matter. This is a product you can sell to anybody. This is a product with good margins. And this is a product that you can start producing immediately. The next thing we're going to be adding is, and we're definitely doing this, this is another one. So these are like the definites, quail eggs. Quail eggs are getting added. I have quail right now on order from a local guy. I have a listener I need to get back to that I may be picking some up from eventually, but we're getting a bunch in, and that initial bunch is going to be really for the purpose of processing class in November for the November workshop. So we'll be processing quail and preparing them for meal and producing that for dinner that night, you know, basically tractored quail. I'm working with some other people. We're coming up with an entire system so that people can do that in an urban environment. So you can get your own quail for meat and eggs in your own backyard with a small garden that almost never has to be watered. All the waste is processed. Everything's closed loop. And you can set it up in any backyard for around $1,000. That's another thing we're doing, but that's totally separate from Nine Mile Farm. We're doing that on a larger scale here. And we'll put in enough birds to produce enough quail eggs that at least when a customer goes, I really want some duck eggs, just want to try a few dozen quail eggs, you know? And we'll produce them with the same high quality standards that we do our duck eggs. And they're a much faster cycle. A quail goes from a hatched egg to either laying eggs or being ready to slaughter in 6 to 7 weeks. 6 to 7 weeks. Now, you can do chickens in 8 weeks, but you can't do a chicken to laying eggs in 8 weeks. Or chicken that can be used for meat or laying eggs in 8 weeks with equal quality. So the quail are a really unique thing. And there's a lot of people doing it around here. When I started looking for people that have them, they're here. They have quail. They have eggs. Craigslist. They're out there. They know how to market themselves. No idea at all. No idea at all. So we're going to add that. And that's primarily going to be, again, an egg-based business that goes right alongside our duck eggs. And you have to start seeing the ARPU. Okay, that's a big fancy word that means make more money every time you touch a customer. It's a word that unless you've been in kind of the upper operational levels of larger businesses, you've probably never heard. ARPU. Average Revenue Per Unit. ARPU. A-R-P-U. And what ARPU is all about is like the phone company switching on about 15 years ago, hey, we need to be bundling services. There's no reason the person should have a landline bill and a cell phone bill. We want it together on one bill. That streamlines everything, and when they eventually quit using their landline, we're more likely to hold their business that way because by then, we'll be selling them internet access and cable TV type services as well. That's about increasing ARPU. Well, a simpler way to do that is you come here now, you want 24 duck eggs. That's $15, right? But you're here. You've driven half an hour. You've driven 45 minutes. You want 12 quail eggs? $4. Yeah, I'll take that. Now we're at $21, right? So we have these new herbal teas. They're $5 a bag. I'll take 2 of those. Now we're at $29 versus $15. And the other products, you know, you get the quail eggs will be about the same margin as the duck eggs. The tea will be almost double the margin. So all of a sudden, this little business becomes something that instead of just barely paying for the living costs here, pays for our living costs, pays our payment on our Toyota 4Runner, and buys us a few meals out every month that we can, by the way, write off as business expenses by taking customers with us or discussing business operations or things like that and changing the rules of economics as they relate to taxation. In fact, not changing the rules, actually understanding the rules and using them to your advantage instead of letting them control what you do. And again, this is an accidental business. The next one is, we're going to do it, because we're going to be doing it here in October. We're going to be teaching you how to do it. How big we take it is the question. It's microgreens. Microgreens are one of the best budding businesses for small-time people that I've ever seen. You're talking about a product that sells by the ounce. And we've gotten emails from at least 10 people now who are making anywhere between $500 and $2,000 a month doing microgreens out of their house, growing them with a few racks in an extra bedroom or something like that. Our thought is, like, the initial idea would be we're continuing to expand the direct consumer base, and that's another product. You can put, you know, $10 worth in a clamshell and make this into, you know, a salad or what have you, and just sell that. And that's what John Dowie's kind of advised us. So at least, you know, give that a shot. And if nothing else, we'll produce it for ourselves, and all of the roots that are left behind in the trimmings will get fed to the ducks, who will hammer it, produce high-quality manure, and continue to improve the quality of their eggs, and continue to improve the quality of our property. So microgreens are, we'll see where that goes. Because this is what I know. I could take the microgreens business and the herbal tea business and the quail egg business and build enough on that I could take an entrepreneurial person and install them here. To build that big enough where that I could take maybe 20% of the profits and give them the rest, and we would both do well. But finding that person, difficult. It's difficult. Because the person that really wants to do it would just go do it. I mean, that's what we're learning more and more with people. We are going to do, in spite of what I said about the teas, we're going to do extensive herbal plantings. We're going to put mint everywhere. Lemon balm everywhere, bee balm everywhere. Everywhere there's bare ground and irrigation, some kind of herb is going in, some sort of perennial herb. I'll buy $200 worth of perennial herb seeds, mix it together, and throw it like cover crop. I don't care. Whatever grows, grows. I mean, that's the approach we're taking with this now. And eventually, we'll begin to add some of the herbs from our property to our blends. You know, mint will go in most things. So if we can say that each tea blend has some piece of it formulated from our property, that adds value. It adds more to the story, but we're not going to get caught up in that. We're going to build that enterprise, and then if we can make product for that enterprise, then we'll save money by harvesting our own product. If we can't, there's a lot of people out there that do a really good job growing individual herbs and preparing them in the best way possible. So we'll continue to grow that. And we're probably by next year going to start doing pre-mixed compost teas and comfrey teas. I may even get a Vortex brewer from Evan at Progressive Gardens. When I'm starting to understand more and more from Mike Vertrees about what you can do with that as far as soil improvement And yet I don't have the time to be building, you know, massive compost piles here and making that super high quality compost. There's things I can get from Evan Folds at Progressive Gardens that will brew incredibly, incredibly valuable fertilizers. And we can brew on demand as much as people want. And then we have more and more comfrey coming up. The tucks keep eating it, but I'm probably going to put in a couple full beds of comfrey this year where they're fully protected, fully looked after, fully cared for. And that'll produce enough to make, you know, 50, 60 gallons of that stuff a year. And, you know, we could sell a little bottle of that to our customers for $4 or $5. And it's one of the greatest garden amendments you can put on your plants, especially right about the time like your tomatoes and your cucumbers and everything are about to start setting fruit. So that's kind of the things that we can add on. The things we're definitely going to do are the herbal tea blends, the quail eggs, and some level of the microgreens. The herbal plantings are just a thing. The premixed fertilizer thing, we're not sure yet. What else could be done if we really wanted to? I've got this great big space out front. Right now I use it for parking, but I could even design it with that in mind. There's easily a quarter acre there that if I brought the material in, put in the irrigation, could become a fabulous market garden. You know, greens, carrots, things like that, stuff that you sell farm to table through farm to table restaurants. And the market's here. We've just like scratched the surface of looking at it, and the desire and the demand is there. That takes a whole level of work. That is almost a full-time job for a single person. That would almost be a whole other enterprise. And it's a big investment first. It's probably $10,000-$15,000 of investment to get it going. Because there's no, again, this is one of those things where I look at it and go, if you were going to put a market garden in, and you were going to put a market garden in for the purpose of building an enterprise, would you buy this piece of land to do that? No. So I don't know that it's worth doing that to. But, you know, if I can get the dirt for the right price, if I can get the materials to build the raised beds for the right price, I could put in a good solid quarter acre, and you know you can make $30,000-$40,000 a year on a quarter acre if you manage it intensively. But it's a full time gig, so I would need another person. So it's probably not going to happen. A full on nursery and live plants. I think that would be a great enterprise here, but I don't want to. I just don't want to do it. I have too many other things to do, and what I have to do is I have to be guarded with my time. And realize that every minute I spend away from TSP and doing these things, TSP is more profitable for me. And it also has a bigger impact. Because what I really want, I want thousands of people doing the things we're talking about today. And I want thousands of other people building thousands of other enterprises in things that have to do with you know, good, clean, whole food and health and anything else. I don't care what it is, as long as it's ethical. You know, as long as it's built on the concept of providing the best quality service and care to customers as possible and being smart enough to know you have to make a profit in order to do that. That's what I'm all about with this. That's what I really want to convey here and make sure more people are doing. And TSP is how I do that. I kind of, you know, mentioned recently that I got a letter from somebody with a soap company and how much it means to me when I get a communication email or a letter in the mail telling me about a business that's built, and then another one came, and then another one came. I think in the last 3 weeks, we've heard from at least 50 people with businesses at some levels of success. And when I say some level of success, they're making money, you know, a couple $100 a week or more. 50 people in business inspired by the Survival Podcast. Why do you think I walked away from corporate America? I mean, there was nothing. There was nothing those people in those boardrooms with self-importance in their suits could ever give me that competes with that. I pour this out every day for you guys. Sometimes you think I go long. Well, that's because a lot of you need to hear it long. You need to hear it until you're finally willing to go do it. Build something of your own. If I can fall into an extra one, you can build one on purpose. So full-on nursery with live plants, I mean, it would be doable. There's a piece of land adjacent to here. If I can ever come up with a way to buy that piece of land, it would be really ideal for it. It'd have its own, you know, own independent well and what have you. And I could put in some bigger pond-like structures that are more tanks to do a lot of things with that. And that would be great as well. But it's probably not going to happen unless I find someone that wants to do it and wants to make it happen, is willing to put some skin in the game to make it happen. If I can get that piece of land, one thing I would do, but that's the reason it's in the could be done, is because I have to get the land first. That piece of land is about another 3.5 acres. There's a bunch of junk on it that would have to be gotten rid of, old trailers and stuff like that. But once it was done, I mean, I could go in there and kind of terraform a really beautiful piece, bring in, you know, enough fill to to build up and provide, you know, grass and little fences and stuff, and put 4 beautiful little tiny homes in there. You know, I'm talking like little one-bedroom cottages, the kind of thing that's built from like a tough shed type level, but one level up from that. And we've priced those at about $20,000 delivered and installed. And because of where I live, I can put in 50 of them if I want to. I can certainly put in 4. And we could rent those out at a profit from day one. And if we can get the land for the right price, we could get that construction project done in a year. We can get financing to do that. We have the, you know, the income and credit to get that done. And we could have tenants in there. And we could have, you know, 4 little families or couples or returning veterans or something living very, very affordably, but living very, very nicely. And that would become a larger community. And that would be like real estate development is what it would add to the farm. And that would add people that you would build relationships with, you could trust to keep an eye on things and an eye on each other. And I think it could really help those people develop their own enterprises. And I'd love to do that. But that's in the maybe category, because I got to get this guy that owns the land to have a clue what land is actually worth around here, because it ain't worth what he thinks, especially in the state that it's in. But that's another. So what isn't going to work here? This will never be like what Stephen Sobukayak has up in Canada. This will never be a permaculture orchard. It'll be a permaculture place with a whole bunch of trees to grow a whole bunch of fruit. But this is not a place to try to make a living growing apples and peaches and pears. This is a place to make a lot of apples and peaches and pears to eat, to make meat out of, to have fun with, to give away, to feed your animals. And when you run out of things to do with them, it's not enough to make it really commercially viable to pack it all up, take it down to a food bank, and give it to people who are hungry. And let people like that, instead of eating garbage, expired, canned food, at one point in their life, eat some of the best food that they'll ever put their hands on, and maybe inspire them to realize that might be their way out, to go find a place where it is viable to do that. Large-scale ponds are not going to happen. We'll talk about a pond that is looking like it's going to happen right now, like it's going in right now this second. And I don't think I can ever put more than 200 to 250 ducks on this property. I think about 250 with the new pond that's going in and some modifications that will happen in the next year and a little bit better of an organized system and enough revenue to make sure the supplemental feed's covered, enough culling of drakes to make sure that we have, you know, far more producers than consumers in the flock, because the drakes are basically consumers. They will defend the ducks a little bit, but not like a rooster does. You know, and we could have 1 to 20, and that would be plenty of drakes. That would be, and we have more than that ratio right now. So there's some drakes that are fixing to graduate as well in the coming month. But no more than 200, 250 ducks here, which would give me basically a half a grazing unit on 3 acres. And I think that's reasonable, and because it's not a direct comparison, it's not like half a cow run. It's not like a miniature Devon cow, because they can make a living on a lot of things cattle can't, that it's fine, but that's it. So that's where we're going with that. Some non-enterprise additions this year. They're really not for the purpose of making money, but who knows what they'll do. We're putting in a beautiful greenhouse. It's Texas Southern Texas Preppers or Texas Southern Preppers design, but instead of using film, we're going to use the greenhouse panels. Not really the greenhouse panels, the plastic kind of wonky panels like you make a roof with. They're available from, you know, Home Depot and Lowe's for about $29 a piece, 12 foot long, and a little over 2 foot wide. So 18 of them across that greenhouse built out of cattle panels. John Dowie's coming to build that as part of the workshop we're doing in October. And, of course, we'll have that all nicely set up and automated for you guys to come in November to see how that works. And it'll be mostly finished when you guys leave the October workshop, enough that you'll know how to do it yourself. But that's going to be more for a season extender. Inside there, we might put a couple tropical plants or something like that through the winter. It'll be right near a building that's got power, so it'll be easy to provide heat to, even if we have to do so electrically. And we won't have to do it that often in this climate. It would be preposterous to do that, I think, in many northern climates. But here, you know, we only have to heat it for about 6 hours on the coldest days and, you know, several weeks a year total when you add it up that you really need to provide heat to it. So we might come up with some more sustainable ways or regenerative ways to produce heat, but we use what we have while we have it and do what we can with what we have. And so we'll start out with that. We're putting in some beautiful self-watering container gardens. And these are going to be, so we put in our annual garden beds, which with the rain we got this year and my lack of input and effort, I've grown basically lots of jalapenos and not much more. Those will go to doing peppers, like four or five different kinds of peppers, maybe some cucumbers and beans and stuff like that. And we're going to be putting in three 6 foot long by 2 foot wide container gardens that are self-watering containers, gravel in the bottom of them, and they're a wicking bed, basically. So you got the dirt sitting on top of the gravel, perforated pipe down in the gravel, and they're all plumbed together, so when they overflow to a bucket, and that bucket catches all the lost nutrient, and as the water level goes down, you just dump it back in. So there'll be a no zero nutrient loss system there. So that's going in, and that's going to produce a lot of high quality production for us. That's, you know, we're going to grow salad greens with that mostly, not peppers. And salad greens are actually very expensive, and other plants like that. And we're also going to put right behind the tanks, these tanks are going right up against the wall, and right behind them we're going to put lattice, 4 foot high. So there will be tomatoes and climbing plants like cucumbers along the back that take almost no space up. And we're putting in a worm farm. We already did, but I think the ants got in the worm farm and killed all the worms. So I'm going to have to take another shot at the worm farm. So that way all the waste from the quail will go in the worm farm and all of the worm production will go into the high production beds. So that's really not an enterprise thing, but honestly, when I look at it, it could be if you really wanted to ramp things up with that type of thing. And this is the type of, these are made from stock tanks, and they've been done really, really well. And the process to do them really well is known in Australia, because there's so many places that honestly are a lot like this. If you want a garden, it's easier to use a stock tank garden or galvanized steel that's welded together like a stock tank than it is to go around and try to build, you know, soil in hard clay and rock. So that's what we're going to be doing with that. And that's just going to be for our own use. The quail will be a pretty big meat yield. Will we ever do that for, you know, profit? Maybe, but I doubt it. I can sit down and eat 6 to 8 quail myself. So if I can produce 100 quail, you know, 5 times a year and just vacuum seal those or can them or whatever and have them as a major meat yield for us, that gives me that. So the eggs become the enterprise and all the overage of the eggs, all the birds we hatch that are roosters or we just have enough hens for now, or these hens are lagging so these hens will replace them, that's just a meat yield for me personally. And again, I really want to kind of make a push toward people in the suburbs seeing quail as that incredible meat yield. The advantage to me that they have over rabbits is they require less care, they're more self-sufficient right away, they don't require the level of expertise to keep from killing them, and they can be processed in under a minute a bird. I know some people are pretty fast processing rabbits, but I know a lot of people that aren't. And I think it's easier for people to process quail than it is to process rabbits. Rabbits are a cute little thing, you know, and quail, you got 50 of them bouncing around there, nobody has a name, you know, they're all barbecue, and it's just easier to do. So I think it's an easier thing to bring to the suburbs. It's quiet. You can grow 20,000 birds a year in a garage if you really wanted to. I wouldn't recommend it, but you could. I think Brad Davies, who'll be here teaching a class on quail in November, is doing something like that number of eggs in production out of a single stack in his garage. Like 2,000 meat birds and 20,000 eggs. I don't know anything else that can compete with that. So we're going to do that here. We could do a lot more, but we're going to do enough for ourselves. And then the eggs, again, for commercial use. We're going to do as much treeing as possible at this point. I'm done killing trees. We know what grows. So places that are premium spots, like where something died, but you know, the right tree will live. It's already irrigated. It's well prepared. It's, you know, it's amended. We'll put high quality trees in there. Everywhere else, the plan this coming fall into spring is mostly things like locusts. We're going to get as much shade and leaf drop on this property as we can. And honestly, I've learned enough now to know we should have already done that. And I have in the notes a pond, hopefully. That's what I put this morning when I made the notes. And then I added something about an hour ago when I started the show, dash, looking good right now. So I'm going to probably call on you guys to let people in this area know, anybody you know in North Texas, to not to not do business with a certain contractor, that I'm going to wait till this all plays out and see what extra cost there is to me and exactly figure out how I want to handle this. But I'm thinking free market solution would be the way to go. But I had a contractor come in here, quote, putting the pond in, total price, including bentonite. He made me pay for the bentonite up first. He had a giant truck show up and dump $5,000 worth of bentonite in the middle of my field. And then for weeks refused to return my calls, would not talk to me, said and kept just texting me, oh, it'll be next week, oh, it'll be next week, oh, it'll be next week, and then bail on me. And never even took a single call from me and bailed on me. And so I found this company that's out there right now. They brought in a machine twice the size of what he had quoted using, and they're having some trouble. But, you know, I went down there. They got a five-foot hole in the ground. If we can make a five-foot hole, we can make a pond. The bentonite's there. If we don't make it as big as originally planned, you know, I can make some little garden ponds and stuff in the orchards and area with the remaining bentonite by hand. So I think that would be really, really cool. So it looks like we're going to have a pond. It may not be as big as originally planned, but we will have a real pond. So that's a non-enterprise addition. In fact, that is a loss. That is a major financial loss. But, you know, it is what it is. And I don't know. I'm thinking, so I started thinking about this other guy, and I went, he knows what he did. He did this intentionally. He quoted the job, and then he thought about the property and thought, I really don't want to do that job. And then he just said, get somebody else to do the job and keep the bentonite. I had also given him a deposit on the labor. He did refund that. But I would have never bought this $5,000 worth of bentonite. And the people that are doing the job right now, they came out and they looked at it yesterday and went, you know, there's really no way to know. There's really no way to know if we're going to be able to do this, so we bring a machine here. So here's the deal. We'll come out here, we'll pound on it for an hour. If we think we can do it after that, we'll keep working. We're going to charge you $350 an hour to do the work. As long as we're digging in rock and beating our machine up in rock, $350 an hour. That's a done deal. If we get here for an hour and we decide we don't want to do this, it's not going to work, you pay us $500 and we leave. Okay. And when Susie said that, I said, you know what, that's what the other guy should have done. I'll buy the clay if you can make the hole. So I have the clay, probably more than I'm going to need now. They're making the hole. We're going to have a pond. But when I was thinking about this, the only reason I would sue this guy is it's under $10,000, so I could sue him in small claims court. It'll cost me $60 in Tarrant County. And I want to teach him a lesson. I don't want him doing this to somebody else. If I lose some money, I lose some money. I mean, it is what it is. It's not personal. It's about the fact that this is clearly somebody that victimizes people. And I looked him up and I found some other places where he victimized people. But I'll tell you what. You guys tell me what you think. I'm a bigger believer in a free market solution. And I think that, you know, there's probably 10,000 of you guys here in North Texas that listen to the show. There's probably plenty of people that know somebody within an 80-mile range of Dallas. Just telling all of you, don't do business with company XYZ, and email anybody you know and tell them don't do business with these people. And by the way, CC this jerk so he knows it's costing him. I'd much rather do a free market solution than a state-based solution. And I have another little jab to throw when we get down to it. I don't want to be dirty and nasty about this, but the more I think about it, and I want to hear what your thoughts are, but the more I think about it, it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with the fact that this jerk is going to do this to somebody else. And right now, because I cashed his check, he thinks he's gotten away with it. I don't think he should get away with it. And I don't think he should be able to do this to others. And it would take me a few hours of work to make sure that anybody that looked for his company found this story of what happened. And then, again, with your assistance, we could just let people know, don't trust this guy. Because what I tell you now is if you want to hire this guy, pay him after he starts the work. Don't give him a deposit because he just bailed. And he bailed because he got a bigger job, and I think he was afraid of this one. It's sad. I didn't really want to throw that in there, but, you know, you guys know me. This is like, you guys are like extended family, honestly, and I kind of have that pent up, and I've been keeping my mouth shut about it for like a month now. And I just wanted to kind of let go of it today. And I want to know what you think. Is it worth making an example out of the guy? I don't want to seem like a vindictive ass, but on the other hand, again, I don't want him doing it to anybody else. And I don't think you guys would either. So, anyway, next up, the lessons, not in this pond fiasco, but the lessons in Nine Mile Farm and building a business. Get in the game and remain adaptable. Like, how did we end up with eggs sitting on a dinner table at one of the best restaurants in Dallas. Because we got in the game. Because we had no plan for that to happen. We never even thought about it. We didn't even think about selling to restaurants. We just wanted to do, you know, basically direct farm sales to consumers. The chef found us. He came here four different times, toured the property four different times and said, this is beyond what I can get anywhere else. And when he decided, you know, I don't want to personally drive, you know, an hour to get the food. So he has a company called C&L that do a lot of buying for him. And they told him, we can get you as many duck eggs as you want. And he said, no, thank you. We got that because we got in the game. You know, and what I'm saying though is understand that when you get in the game, you may figure out that all the things you were doing don't work, but you'll find your way to what does work. You know, somebody quoted me today on Facebook, and I didn't even remember I said it. But what they put on Facebook was, there is no room for perfection in the creation of an enterprise. And there isn't. Creating a business from the ground up is like making sausage, right? I mean, a lot of stuff goes in there that doesn't look really good when it goes in there, but it's the end product that matters. You know, liver and hog jowls don't look real good when you're processing it through a grinder, but that end sausage is the product, and that end product wouldn't be right without those things that don't look so good when they're going in. And that's building a business, and you can't do it unless you start doing it and try. The next thing is, what you think is best may not be. There's a whole bunch of stuff I thought would work here. It didn't work. And there's a whole bunch of things that I was like, I don't know that there's really anything to that. And they turned out to be the things that did work. And by being willing to put your ego aside and go, okay, that failed. It's okay. This succeeded even though you didn't think it would. I don't care. I love this now because it works. Embrace that. You know, you have to accept that. There is always a way. There is always a way to make something from what looks like nothing. You come and look at this property, especially 2.5 years ago. And you go, this is horrible. Everything's brown. There was nothing. It was the wet season. It was the winter when we moved here. There was nothing green here. Now in the winter, the damn thing's like emerald green. It looks like Ireland here in the winter, from one end to the other, just from what we've done. But we came here. It was like this rocky, dead, dry. Ugh. All the neighbors were like, it'll never work. Everything we did, that'll never work. Don't worry about it. Nothing will ever grow there. I've lived here since, a guy from behind me said, I've been here since 1971. And there ain't never been no grass along this fence. Not only is there grass on my side of the fence now, our fertility spread over. He's got grass where he said it wouldn't grow on his property. He didn't even do nothing. Right? There's always a way. Next, don't let fear hold you back. You cannot be held back by fear. It doesn't make any sense for you to not act due to fear. Because you'll never get anywhere and you'll never conquer your fear with an action. You know, when you were a little kid, maybe you were afraid. And you go to your bed alone and it's dark and you're afraid. So you get under covers and you hide. And you think there's something in your closet. Well, as long as you hide under the covers and do nothing, you stay afraid of the closet. Eventually, you get brave enough to get out of bed, turn on the light, shine a light in the closet, look in there and go, you know what? There ain't nothing in there. You face your fear, you get over it, and now you can sleep peacefully. That's how business is. You got to go confront the demons. You got to go confront the monsters. You got to go out there and be willing to fail. And that's the biggest thing you young people are dealing with today. Fear of failure. You know what? I'm going to say a word a lot of people don't like. But it's the only word that will convey what you need to hear. So if you don't like really bad words, hit forward right now for 30 seconds. When it comes to being afraid of shit, fuck that. Okay? Fuck it. I'm telling you. That's what you millennials need to understand. You have to get past this fear-based bullshit. And a lot of you guys look down at millennials that are one generation ahead. You have the same fear-based mindset. You have the same, you're just a little more established in your life and you look a little bit more stable, but you have the same fear. What if this? What if that? I don't know. Find out. Get out there and kick life in the ass and take what you have coming to you. You deserve what you want, but you may have to work for it. You may have to work for it. In fact, you will have to work for it. That's why you deserve it, because you're willing to work for it. See, that's another big problem. Just so many of you, you don't believe that you deserve what you want. Like, you have a hard time. Like, if I said, I want you to stand up right now and I want you to say, I deserve what I want. You get up and go, I deserve, and you trail off. Can't say it. Well, how the hell are you going to get it then? You deserve what you want. And it's okay to feel that way because deserving it won't make it happen. Going out and then realizing you deserve it and taking it, that'll get you there. Don't let fear hold you back. Mistakes happen, roll with it. I made a ton of mistakes here. That's how I've gotten to where I am. On this piece of crap property, I have gone out there, I've spent money, I've made mistakes, I've looked at stuff, and there's days, don't get me wrong, it's not always, oh, everything's great. I walk around some days and I look at a tree and I just, I killed a lot of cherry trees before I gave up here, but guys, killed a lot of cherry trees. Before I went, you know what, this is just not a place for cherries. It's not a place, it's not right. Oh, by the way, they should be all in shade. Really? Well, I put them in the wrong place then. You know? And then some of them are living. But will they ever produce enough to make it worth the effort? I don't know. But I know if somebody says to me, I'm going to put in a cherry orchard, I'm going to say, well, you better move to Washington because this isn't the place to do it. And I was willing to make that risk and then roll with it. You know? I walked out, you know, a couple weeks ago and I have two muscadine grapes growing up this arbor that we put in at this little zone 2 orchard. And the one's just looking beautiful, man. It's just rocking this year. You know, it's the second year and it's got its roots down now. It's all dug off in a hoogle bed. It gets some irrigation. It's happy. The other one's like brown, dead. It looked like it was just dead. And I'm like, I was so disgusted, guys. I'll admit this. I was so disgusted. For a week, I didn't even go look at it. Other than from a distance. And when I had to go over there, I just walked right past it. I refused to look at it. Like, it doesn't make any sense. These two things are planted 6 feet apart. One's dead, one's beautiful. Well, when I get down, you know what? I didn't do anything wrong. This one, goose murder. And I have several grapevines that were doing okay that are dead. The geese decided they didn't like them, and they murdered those and not others for some reason. I don't know. I do know I have to put some level of protection around them now, or at least get them up to size where there's bigger around as your thumb where the geese can't just murder them. But that's what happened. The geese murdered it. You know, we're down to two geese. Now we should have a lot less geese murdered. If the geese keep murdering things, who knows? Maybe they have to go to the goose table. We'll see. But, you know, for right now, Buddy and Joe are safe, and if they kill a grapevine or two, I'll roll with it. But mistakes happen. That's what you got to do. Okay, well, that didn't work, so what will work? This is how, and you know what? When you're still employed, or even part-time income from a job, and you have a part-time business, this is when you can afford all your mistakes. This is when you can figure all your shit out. This is where your passion carries you through. This is where you can make it happen. So do it. And adapt. Don't be married to, well, I have to produce 100% of X. Realize there's other people better at certain pieces of that than you are. Rely on them. Understand that the way you build enterprises is by helping other people build enterprises. Every time you source a product from somebody, try to source it from somebody that's doing things the way you would do them if you were doing it. And help that person build their own business. And your success becomes their success. Because one day, instead of ordering a pound of something, you're ordering 20 pounds. Or instead of ordering one part, you're ordering 100. This is how you build and breed success. And it's what I want for this audience more than anything else in the world. And again, I know we talked a lot about gardens and greenhouses and quail and ducks today, but it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. Whatever it is that you really love and what you're really passionate about, go do that. Make things happen for yourself because you can. I mean, that's the other big thing I would like to convey to people is you can succeed. You can make this happen. I'm not saying you will. Notice can and will are very, very different things. It's up to you if you will, but you can. And you younger people, you better. My final message today is for you guys that are 30 and under. You better. No one is going to hand you shit. You're coming into a world where jobs are being eliminated, but opportunities are being created every day. Create your own opportunities. And don't think that means Jack says I shouldn't take a job. Go make as much money as you can at a job while you figure out what the hell you're going to do with your life. But when you figure it out, kick ass, take names, make it happen. With that, this has been Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or if they don't.
I worked hard, but not for the money. I did my best to please. I used to think it was funny, till I realized it was all a tease. Don Quixote had his windmills, Ponce de Leon took his cruise, took Sinbad seven voyages to see that it was all a ruse. That's why I'm looking for the next best thing, looking for the next best thing. I appreciate the best, but I'm settling for less, so I'm looking for the next best thing. Discourage me. You can believe what you want, that'll never change it.